I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 13th of June. All things political this hour, and our hour is taking a different focus because there was horrendous terror in Orlando over the weekend. The president and the presidential candidates have responded. And what's our response to terror, guns, protecting our citizens, identifying those among us who cause us unbelievable harm? What are our values? What are our fears? And how is it all playing out? And we're just a few months away from a presidential election. We'll hear brief comments. Donald Trump is evidently speaking this hour. Hillary Clinton spoke last hour. We'll hear a little bit of what she said. Donald Trump has been doing a lot of tweeting. And, of course, the president spoke. And we'll hear a bit of his comments on all of this tragedy during the course of this hour. Our guest is Heather McGee. Heather is president of DEMOS, which is a public policy organization working for an America where we all have an equal say in our democracy and an equal chance in our economy. She's an MSNBC contributor. Her opinions, writing, and research have appeared in the Wall Street Journal, USA Today, National Public Radio, The Washington Post, and The New York Times. And in 2009, she co-chaired a task force within Americans for Financial Reform that helped shape key provisions of the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act. We'll be welcoming your many phone calls during the course of this hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page, where we always welcome your comments, is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we're on Twitter as well, and that's at K Dunn Show. Heather, thank you so much for being with us. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
What a horrible weekend, and it brings to the forefront, and it sort of smacks it right in your face, terror, guns, how we protect our citizens, what's going on, and the great fear the LGBT community is feeling and Muslim community is feeling. It's all front and center, and we're in the middle of a presidential run.
Absolutely, and I think we've immediately seen how it is that two different versions of leadership, most acutely between Donald Trump and President Obama, you know, what do you say to the American people and to the world at a moment like this? Do you call for us to recognize our common humanity, or do you demonize? And I think we saw two very different examples of that.
Mm-hmm. The scope of these tragedies, this one was the worst in American history, and it's at a Latin club where people have gone to feel some sense of protection and to have some political organizing going on. So in the middle of, you know, this gay pride month that we're experiencing with parades all over the country, so that community is living in fear, although bravely stepping out on the streets and marching. You've got the Muslim community under attack. I mean, I don't know how you handle all of these issues, how we can lessen the hate.
You know, it's interesting. When a few months ago, about a dozen progressive leaders and I joined together when Donald Trump's anti-Muslim ban was first announced. It was just in the wake of the Mother Emanuel shooting and the Planned Parenthood shooting. And we decided to take out an ad, a full-page ad in the New York Times, with the hashtag "We Are Better Than This," mm-hmm. and it had a picture of a flag at half mast, and it just said, "Is this America?" And that we, as progressive leaders of many different faiths, women's organizations, Muslim organizations, LGBTQ organizations, a democracy organization like DEMOS, stand together to say that, in fact, you know, we are an experiment in this country of America, where there is someone here from every corner of the globe, where we are not actually united by some single faith or single race or single origin. And so we actually have to work multiple times as hard to reassert our common humanity, and that anyone who claims to speak for this country has to see that as his or her project. And it's just so dispiriting to see that is so obviously not what all of the people who are vying for the presidency want to do mm-hmm. at this moment.
And all this happened, friends made mention of the Muhammad Ali funeral that took place, and you had Muslim people from all over the world, interfaith people at two ceremonies that 14,000 people attended, with exactly on display what you were talking about, our common humanity. It was extraordinary. And then, a day and a half later, you have the worst mass shooting in American history.
This is a very difficult moment, obviously, for the LGBT community and obviously also for the Muslim community. And I think it's really important that we all know, I mean, Muslims are a religious minority and a cultural minority in this country, but there are so many myths about how Muslims in America live their lives and what their beliefs are. And I think it's really important for your listeners to seek out progressive Muslim voices at this moment, because there have been so many wonderful statements and research reports really trying to dispel some of the myths. For example, you know, it is a fact that 42% of American Muslims actually support same-sex marriage. 42%, that's pretty high. There was, you know, a lot of beautiful commentary around the marriage equality ruling, which is almost a year ago now, saying that in the same month, just a few weeks before the marriage equality ruling, that same court ruled that American Muslims, that Muslims have a right to wear their hijab, right to wear a headscarf. So that same idea of personal liberty protects same-sex marriage and also protects religious expression. So this idea of the Islamophobia that must be combated right now has to be hand-in-hand with combating homophobia, and there really are voices saying that right now.
Mm-hmm. And yet there is legitimate fear. You had, in Los Angeles, there could have been a horrendous attack in Los Angeles on the gay pride parade that was going to take place there. Thank goodness they apprehended somebody. This all seems to come on the heels of a lot of real progressive change in this country. And I want to talk about the backlash that comes from that. You had the horrendous massacre in Charleston. You had what happened in Orlando yesterday. You have the country's first African-American president.
Absolutely.
And you have great gains that have been made, historic gains, in the LGBTQ community as well. So is it normal in some way to expect a kind of backlash? And I guess the larger question is, how large is that backlash in this country, and what do you do about it?
Well, I think that the backlash is coming in many different ways. It's always been, there's always been a backlash to progress. And what we need to do as leaders, as media commentators, as obviously as elected officials, is really understand that the work of America is the work to find and create a sense of being one people across our differences. And in fact, if you look at our political discourse right now, it's exactly the opposite. It really seems like politicians and pundits have made it their overarching goal, you know, other than just to get elected or to get their, you know, face on the news, their overarching goal seems to be to want to sow distrust about the other, whoever that capital O might be, whether it's people living in same-sex families, Muslim Americans, immigrants from Central America. I mean, this idea that there are just whole swaths of people in the country who are so fundamentally different from you, whoever the listener is, that they're just not deserving, has really become too much a part of particularly the conservative narrative day in and day out. And that is an existential threat to America, because we can't live in that kind of society where we feel so torn and alienated from one another, because we are so diverse. We are the world's, you know, most sort of radical experiment in a multiracial democracy.
Do you worry, Heather, that we need a better handle? And if so, how do we get a better handle of identifying people who may cause us harm? The FBI statement today was interesting. This guy had been interviewed and had made some outrageous statements, and then he could go out and buy a gun, which is unbelievable. But I'm just wondering if somebody like that had been interviewed a couple times by the FBI, if there's something that our counterterrorism force should be doing that we're missing here.
Had been interviewed by the FBI, reports from his ex-wife that he had been abusive and violent towards her, And yet was still able to be a security guard and still able to get an AR-15. I mean, it's really quite shocking. And I think there's a lot of soul searching that needs to be done. And, you know, the president has stepped to the podium over 15 times to talk about a mass shooting, and yet there is still no action on gun safety reform, and we still see this idea, unfortunately, that the right to be able to have a gun that could kill dozens of people in a span of minutes is somehow what the Constitution protects.
And the same kind of gun used in Aurora, in San Bernardino, in Newtown, the same AR-15 was used. Hillary Clinton said today that weapons of war have no place on our streets.
That's right.
Once again, you're going to have a discussion, and she's been very vociferous on this issue in the campaign so far, only going to be more so after the events of this weekend. But the battle lines seem to be drawn on this issue, and things don't get done.
I mean, it is, you know, it's interesting. Donald Trump did something that was actually quite unprecedented, and it was this morning. It was after his string of kind of vitriolic tweets yesterday. But he suggested in interviews this morning that President Obama may have somehow been involved in Sunday's massacre in Orlando. And he did it by basically saying, you know, with innuendo, he said, look, we're being led by a man that is either not tough, not smart, or he's got something else in mind. And the something else in mind, you know, people can't believe it. He's basically continuing the idea that he began with being the most vocal proponent of the birther idea that the president of the United States is somehow not legitimate, not American, not an American citizen, and that I don't think people make this connection enough, but the way that the Republican Congress and the sort of conservative media environment have legitimated, essentially abdicating responsibility to govern, to come together, to solve problems in the public interest, to be committed wholesale to stopping the president and Democrats from doing anything with our government comes from and is very deeply connected to the just outrageous attacks and delegitimization of this president.
And here is part of what you mentioned, what Donald Trump said today, and here are his words. We'll welcome phone calls right after this. 800-486-8655.
We're led by a man that either is not tough, not smart, or he's got something else in mind. And the something else in mind, you know, people can't believe it. People cannot be, they cannot believe that President Obama is acting the way he acts and can't even mention the words radical Islamic terrorism. There's something going on. It's inconceivable.
Is he just talking off the top of his head here, or is he purposely making people believe that Obama's somehow implicated in all of this? I mean, it's very bizarre.
It's bizarre is a very, I think, gentle way to put it.
Yeah.
He knows exactly what he's doing. There is a, you know, swirl, an underbelly of conspiracy theory that happens, and it's very clear that he's dog whistling and speaking to those people who believe that the president, and which is the plurality of Republicans, who believe that the president is actually a Muslim. And therefore, he is deeply sympathetic to, you know, to terrorists. You know, this is a discourse that began in the 2008 election, him palling around with terrorists. You know, and he said on the Today Show, he said there are a lot of people that think maybe he doesn't want to get it, right? He doesn't want to understand. That was his nice way of saying maybe he doesn't want to understand that Islam is, as a religion, something that we should be at war against.
Let's go to phone calls. We have many of them coming in. Heather McGee is our guest for All Things Political. She is president of DEMOS, which is a public policy organization working for a country where we all have an equal say in our democracy and an equal chance in our economy. Our phone number is 800-486-8655 because we experienced the worst act of mass shooting in America's history and an act of terror over the weekend. Our All Things Political has taken a bit of a different turn because obviously this is going to be front and center in a presidential campaign, and we're talking about what, well, we have yet to talk more about what the president has said about what happened in Orlando. We heard a bit of what Donald Trump had to say. We'll hear what Hillary Clinton had to say, and we'll hear what you have to say, and we'll start with your calls with Willem in Colfax. Hi, Willem.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
This is really what's troubling me the most about Donald Trump is his, instead of using this tragedy to unite people and to speak about American values, he's using it as a divisive attack on the president and, his basically coded hate speech to appeal to... this is what I worry about, is that my father was in a concentration camp as a political prisoner in World War II, and my uncle was executed in the same war for being working against the Nazi Party. Mm. And in order for this hate and all this stuff to be executed, they needed the brown shirts, what Donald Trump likes to call the poorly educated. And I'm not suggesting that all people who aren't educated are hate-filled. That's not my point. But I'm worrying that he's stoking the fire of, thugs and people who are full of hate and rage, rather than appealing to what Abraham Lincoln said, the first president, the first Republican president in this country, appealing to the better angels of our nature.
All right, Willem, I'm going to thank you for your call. Your phone line is very scratchy. Heather, what do you think?
I think Willem made a very powerful point there, and I really appreciate him telling his own family story there. Of all people, the former Republican nominee, Mitt Romney, made a similar point in saying that there would be trickle-down racism. Mm-hmm. And that is really the concern. The concern, I think, is less... there's obviously a terrible possibility that someone who has made the statements that Donald Trump has made could actually be given the nuclear codes and could actually spend 4 years... not making progress in this country towards the urgent concerns that we have around climate change, infrastructure, jobs, demographic change, all of these important things that as progressives we want to see happen over the next 4 years. But there's also the enduring impact that this political cycle and his media ubiquity has on the discourse in this country and has on, because he's made it his brand to say, what he thinks. That is encouraging a new level of open legitimization of hate, of intolerance, and of just a sense that the other people in this country, whoever they may be on any given day, just aren't deserving and are, at best stupid or lazy, and at worst, criminal and evil.
You mentioned Romney, who the news reports I've read indicated was close to tears, choking up when he gave his speech at the Utah Republican Convention over the weekend, or on Friday, late last week. The New York Times had an interesting piece, I'm sure you saw, that looked at the underreported white vote, white uneducated vote, that President Obama had received, and outlined a possible path to victory for Donald Trump, because the understanding was that that vote is going to go to Donald Trump. And if indeed you don't have a huge turnout among minorities in this country, that indeed he could face a possible pathway to victory. Do you share that view?
I think anything is possible. I think the only constant in our politics over the past 20 years has been change. And so anything is possible. But I also think it is incredibly important that right now, which is at a moment of real demographic change in this country, that we, I'm African American and we are a multiracial organization, and we've really at DEMOS felt that it was very important to have a conversation in multiracial spaces with white audiences about the need to overcome racial anxiety, the fact that this demographic change is happening at the same time as many other cultural changes around gender and sexual identity, and also happening at a time of acute economic anxiety where all families, because of, frankly, trickle-down economics, all families have seen their economic fortunes decline generation over generation in the least paid 90% of the income distribution, but that it feels particularly acute for many white working and middle-class families who had a really good deal. They had a progressive America with a good union and health care and benefits, whereas many African-American and Latino and Native American families are, you know, never had that, so there's a bit more of a sense of hope. So we've got to have a more sophisticated political conversation that doesn't go straight to the lowest common denominator of racial identity and say that, you know, because you're white, you know, you're going to have the sort of natural anxiety that you feel about a changing country be enough to make you vote for someone who would really undermine its highest ideals.
We're going to welcome our phone calls momentarily. Heather McGee is our guest for All Things Political, president of Demos. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. We're concentrating a good portion of the hour talking about the horrendous act of terror that took place in Orlando over the weekend. And now we have all kinds of elements coming together. We have someone who claimed that he was not a member of ISIS, but did this for ISIS, had sympathies for ISIS, although the reports indicate that it's more somebody who was radicalized by looking at the internet. And we'll talk a little bit about that more with Heather. So he attacks Latin LGBTQ nightclub where people went to be together and feel safe and have a good time, and did this mass shooting. And we're getting a response from our guest as to what the political ramifications are here and how will we as a country deal with all of these issues with homophobia, with Islamophobia, with AK-15s being on the street, and people who have expressed some very questionable views about many things being able to go out and buy this kind of weapon and then do what he did. The first contact with the FBI, this killer, was in May of 2013. He claimed that he had family connections to Al-Qaeda. He was a member of Hezbollah. And he hoped law enforcement would raid his apartment and assault his wife and child so that he could martyr himself. He was interviewed over a 10-month period of time. So there may be some questions about how strong our counterterrorism and identifying people in this country who may be terrorists, how successful we are in that and whether we need a new strategy there. It was quite a weekend, wasn't it? Our phone number is 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org, Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. More phone calls now for our guest, Heather McGee, and we go to Claire in Madison. Hi, Claire.
Hi, Kathleen. I am so angered by the hypocrisy of Donald Trump and these other fearmongers that we're hearing messages from today. And this is why. Why aren't Christians vilified when they're the mass murderer, like the movie theater guy, like the Sandy Hook, et cetera, et cetera? It's just insane. And I'm being facetious, but by their logic, maybe we should only let women live in the United States because we're safe.
Heather.
That I really appreciate your comment. There is a sense of the absolutely absurd at this moment. It's terrifying. And it's true that we are experiencing something where people are very, very quick. Because, you know, most Americans who are not Muslim do not have much experience. And frankly, Fox News has made it their job since 2001 to vilify an entire religion and a culture of people. And it's really disheartening, and it's playing on people's sort of worst fears. I do want to make sure that we kind of really lift up not just the assailant, but also the community that he attacked. And, you know, this has been pride all over the country,
mm-hmm.
And it's so important that we really, you know, reach out and inward to recognize that despite the judicial ruling making marriage equality the law of the land, there is still very strong homophobia in our, you know, in our states and counties, in families across the country. And if people haven't had a chance to read Richard Kim's essay in The Nation called Please Don't Stop the Music, I really do recommend it, where he talks about how important gay nightclubs are, not just as spaces to get drunk and have fun, but actually as sanctuaries,
mm-hmm.
As transformative healing places, and they have been since the AIDS crisis through even to today.
Thank you, Heather. It's a good suggestion for another guest for us as well.
Mm-hmm.
Secretary of State Clinton today talked about, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are about this, it seems to be growing momentum here with the families of the 9/11 victims suing Saudi Arabia. She called for countries like Saudi Arabia and Qatar and I believe a couple others to stop the funding of terror groups. Have we done enough in that direction? Is she right to call on that? Is there a lot of that?
You know, I honestly, obviously, there's going to be, there needs to be more innovation all the time in all of our public structures and all of the ways that we try to keep ourselves safe. That said, this assailant is a very good example of how one can self-radicalize, and how right now what is seen on the streets of countries in the Middle East as a war against Islam is itself creating an us-versus-them mentality that no amount of surveillance, no amount of changes in escalation, frankly, of foreign policy that uses the military is actually going to solve. We are right now in such an interconnected world that you can't possibly use foreign policy to stop what is right now a sense of deep alienation and hate that is being transmitted across the globe, you know, within an instant because of the internet. So, can you stop someone who is mentally unstable? And of course, anyone who would murder another human being is mentally unstable. Can you stop that person from getting an assault weapon? Absolutely. But we also have to do much deeper work in this country to reverse this sense of growing hate, fear, hostility, and alienation based on who you are, what you believe, and where you come from.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Claire. Mike is next in Eau Claire. Hi, Mike.
Yes, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good. I just had one comment and question, and that is, I'm wondering, I guess, why we're talking about Donald Trump at all. I'm wondering why we're not focusing in this conversation, and really the national narrative, on what actually happened. What actually happened was a conservative fundamentalist Muslim killed a whole bunch of people because he believed that Allah told him to do it. And what I don't understand is why this has turned into discussion about homophobia, Islamophobia, when a conservative Christian person did not do this crime, a actual fundamentalist extreme Muslim did. And until we start focusing on what actually happened, I wonder who is going to protect you and me. I want to know how this or any president is going to protect us and keep this from actually happening again. So I believe that we're taking our eye off the ball and focusing on things that are more politically motivated and not about my safety or your safety or America's safety, but more about what seems to be practical given certain people's fundamental political beliefs.
What do you think?
I don't think it's about homophobia or Islamophobia or anything like that.
What do you think we should be doing, Mike?
I think we should be looking at the culture that breeds this kind of extreme thinking. Actually help the Islamic community themselves begin to look at what actually happens in the minds of these people and begin to take responsibility for creating networks of people getting together and going, you know, what is Islam really about? Obviously, it's not about this, but people are coming out of our community who are doing this. So we need to take responsibility for our own people, much as the Christian or other religious communities attempt to do anyway.
Heather.
It's very important that right now we recognize that we don't know everything, but from early comments from the assailant's father, homophobia specifically was in fact an essential part of what drove him, and that he was saw two men kissing in Miami and became obsessed with this. This is someone who I think we really do have to recognize that there is quite a bit of continuity between feeling deeply threatened by something that is different from you across all kinds of phobias, right, and all kinds of extremism and hate. And I don't think that any one religion, in fact, I know that no one religion has the monopoly on that kind of extremism in beliefs and in sort of organizing tactics, frankly, particularly, in the United States. And so the idea that Islam is a more hateful religion than any other major religion is one of those false beliefs that I think we have to push back against very hard. As I said at the beginning of the interview, 42% of Muslim Americans support same-sex marriage, not are just tolerant of LGBTQ people, but support marriage equality. This is not a community that is at all monolithic, and it's certainly not at all a community that we who are not Muslim need to be blaming at this moment, as the previous caller said, any more than any other community where one person does a horrible act.
We listened to what Donald Trump had to say in a portion of his remarks this morning. Here's a little bit of what Hillary Clinton had to say as she spoke in Cleveland today. And here's what she had to say, some of what she had to say about Orlando.
Americans refusing to be intimidated or divided. Yesterday, I called Mayor Dyer of Orlando and offered my support and my appreciation for the leadership that he and the other officials have shown. This is a moment when all Americans need to stand together. No matter how many times we endure attacks like this, the horror never fades. The murder of innocent people breaks our hearts, tears at our sense of security, and makes us furious. Now we have to steel our resolve.
She, of course, has made gun control and LGBTQ rights very important issues in her campaign. She called for a reinstatement of an assault weapons ban, favors a California proposal regulating ammunition, and legislation ending the immunity gun manufacturers have from lawsuits. Those haven't gone anywhere, and certainly the president mentioned again that he'd been in front of the podium how many times? 15 times, mass shootings during his administration, and you can see how weary his face is when he brings this up again and again. We're better than this. We should do something about this. Doing nothing is a statement of itself. What about those issues that she has been very strong on so far in the campaign and will be even more so now? Do those resonate, Heather, with the majority of the American public, or are we incredibly divided on each and every one of those?
Gun safety reform is quite popular. Obviously, the president, in the wake of the terrible Sandy Hook shooting of 20 first graders and I believe it was six staff members really scaled up a call for what is the most popular, right? Over 9 out of 10 Americans support changes to increase the use and make more effective background checks. That's the lowest hanging fruit in some ways, but the basic idea that we shouldn't allow an industry that is incredibly profitable to not have to innovate around safety, things like trigger locks, safe storage requirements, fingerprinting on guns, you know, a few dozen toddlers, Kathleen, have killed accidentally, or sorry, shot accidentally someone
yes.
in 2016 alone.
Yes.
Right? So there are many things, even though, you know, banning certain kinds of weapons is, you know, in the plurality controversial. There is so much that can be done that is not being done, one, because of the problem of big money in politics and the National Rifle Association's lock on our government, and also, frankly, Republicans' desire to not see this president be able to do his job.
Thanks, Mike, for your call. Let's go to Jerry in Waukesha. Hi, Jerry.
Hello.
Hi, Jerry.
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead, please.
Yes, with regard to Donald Trump's comments regarding President Obama and the quote-unquote something else, I would refer you to the Dinesh D'Souza movie that was out in 2014 or 15. I think the title was The Year, and then Obama's America, or words to that effect. It chronologically tells the story of his life from a very young boy all the way up to his rise to the presidency and all his motivations, ideals, and beliefs. And that would answer anyone's question in regards to the something else, because the something else is materializing, I believe, here with the amount of refugees that come into this country, all of these mass shootings. That is the something else, and that's why.
What are you saying, that the president you're saying the president planned all of this, Jerry? What in the world are you saying?
Well, what I'm saying is the lack of the ability to utter the words ISIS and Islamic terrorism and any other words that the media uses and any other American, red-blooded American uses.
Yeah, he is a red-blooded American. Let's go on to Luke in Stevens Point. Hi, Luke.
Hello. I just wanted to kind of go off of something the guest had said earlier about Donald Trump potentially aggravating Daesh with some of his actions of marginalizing the Muslim community in the U.S. and blocking Syrian refugees. I think it's kind of unfair not to point out some of the foreign policy decisions that Hillary Clinton has had in the past, such as, you know, as far as blocking refugees, she blocked refugees from the military coup causing, you know, turmoil in Honduras, that she refused to call a military coup. You know, she personally oversaw drone strikes that were responsible for killing, you know, 1,000-plus civilians. I mean, there are various other decisions that she's made as far as destabilizing governments. You know, I think she has been integral in putting the U.S. in a bad view in many other countries, particularly in South America and the Middle East.
Who are you voting for, Luke?
I'm not certain yet. I might be voting for Jill Stein.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit. It's because there's so much to talk about. I didn't know we would be talking about the worst shooting, mass shooting in American history this hour with you, Heather. But let's talk a little politically here for a while. It was interesting to hear Elizabeth Warren, who really is taking on Donald Trump in a huge, direct, I think, very effective way last week. And I think that she may be able to bring some of the Bernie Sanders over to support Hillary Clinton. Obviously, Luke is a holdout here. What do you think of that? What do you think of her ability to be able to do that and how important it is for her to do that to win an election?
So Senator Warren, since she was Professor Warren, has been a true leader on the issues of economic inequality. Very much more recently on the issues of racial inequality and how they're connected. And no matter what, and no matter who the candidate is, it is very clear that across the ideological spectrum, the American people are fed up with the political status quo in which the people who can write the biggest checks are able to, by and large, shape the direction of our policies in this country. Across the ideological spectrum, people, including the majority of Republican voters, want the wealthy to pay higher taxes, support dramatic increases in the affordability of college, expanding Social Security, you know, raising the minimum wage. These are ideas that are not part of the kind of conservative elite economic agenda by any means, but they're incredibly powerful even at the Republican base because people understand that we're living in a country right now where half of American families couldn't pay a $400 bill that landed on their doorstep without going into debt or selling something, and that the fundamental pathways to the middle class have been broken. And so when Elizabeth Warren speaks from that authentic place of outrage about the political and economic inequality in this country, it's an incredibly important voice within the party.
Yeah, I like that phrase that you use because she is quite authentic, isn't she?
Yes.
Yeah. Let's welcome more phone calls momentarily. You're listening to All Things Political. Heather McGee is our guest. She is president of DEMOS, a public policy organization working for our having an equal say in democracy and in our economy. She's an MSNBC contributor. She writes and for the Wall Street Journal. Her opinion pieces and research have appeared there, USA Today, National Public Radio, The Washington Post, and The New York Times. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's listen a little bit to what the president had to say about what happened in Orlando and get Heather's response.
So this is a sobering reminder that attacks on any American, regardless of race, ethnicity, religion, or sexual orientation, is an attack on all of us and on the fundamental values of equality and dignity that define us as a country. And no act of hate or terror will ever change who we are or the values that make us Americans. Today marks the most deadly shooting in American history. The shooter was apparently armed with a handgun and a powerful assault rifle. This massacre is therefore a further reminder of how easy it is for someone to get their hands on a weapon that lets them shoot people in a school or in a house of worship or a movie theater or in a nightclub. And we have to decide if that's the kind of country we want to be.
You so much feel for him. The number of times he's had to go in front of the podium, you can see in his face how he really wants to do something about this, Heather.
That's right. He wants to do something about it. And the frustrating thing is that he has the majority of American support. And, you know, one of the callers earlier was sort of, and of course Donald Trump has been doing this, suggesting that the president has been sort of sitting on his hands in fighting against ISIL and fighting against against terrorism around the world. And of course that couldn't be farther from the truth. And many progressives on foreign policy are actually believe that he's done too much in terms of drone strikes and too much in terms of militarization across the world. And so, but the very idea that he's unable to protect the American people when majorities of us support these kinds of common sense gun reforms because of the problem of big money in our politics and because of Republican obstructionism is disgusting, frankly.
Let's go to Mike in Madison next time, Mike.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
The one thing that these mass shootings all have in common is the use of assault weapons. These weapons weren't available to the general public before the 1950s. The AK-47 with the 30-round clip was followed by the AR-15, also with a 30-round clip, high-capacity clips that can be quickly changed out for military use. And if they're because of the arms industry needing to make tons of profit, you know, these things are sold to the populace. And it's this type of weapon, these high capacity clips that need to be eliminated. These things weren't meant for public use, and if there was money to be made in screaming out loud fire in a public theater, then there'd be somebody screaming that we should have the right to be able to do that. If there was money to be made driving 100 miles an hour in front of a school zone, somebody'd be screaming for the right to be able to do that. And the only reason that they're screaming for the right to be able to sell these military-grade weapons and high-capacity clips is because there's money to be made. And it's not the president we need to be thinking about. We need to be thinking about the Ron Johnsons and the Congress.
All right. Thank you very much, Mike, for your call. Heather.
I think Mike said it very, very well. We really do have to ask ourselves, in a country that is, you know, the most armed, whether or not we want to have these kinds of weapons on the street. Mass shootings are on the rise. Of the 12 deadliest shootings in the United States history, at least half have happened after 2007. This is an epidemic of gun violence, an epidemic of not just mass shootings, but accidental shootings, as I said before, literally by toddlers who will pick up a family member's gun. This is a public health threat. It is something that it is very true that the power of the gun lobby, of gun manufacturers, who are the major backers of the National Rifle Association, we simply have to, as a country, break the lock that they have on our politics.
Thanks, Mike. Dorothea in Hill Point. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
I am back again. I just wanted to make a statement about Trump. I am a Trump supporter, and I am a registered nurse. I am not the uneducated. And I think it's liberal rhetoric saying that he instills hate in people. I do not have any hate. I am not racist. I love all people unless they're hurting someone else. I do totally agree with the other caller about Obama. He refuses to say radical Islam. There is a problem there. I don't know what his problem is. It's not saying that Islam is bad. It is saying there's, it'd be like saying a radical American or American Christian, like the bombings that our own American people have done. And this man that happens to be a Muslim, which I do not have anything against any other Muslims. So I think it's just rhetoric that Trump is hateful. He isn't. He's just warning us. And that's how I feel. So
I really appreciate you calling. Could you tell me a little more about why it is that you support Donald Trump? What is it about?
We have about a minute left, Dorothy.
I support Trump because he is saying a lot of what the American people believe, that America is just ran by a bunch of corruption, not only on the left, it's the right, too, both sides. We have a Congress that's letting Obama get away with doing all these backroom deals, and I'm sick of it, and I know a lot of other people who are going for Trump, because he may not be the polished politician that Obama is and speak as eloquently as Obama, but he certainly has... He talks from the heart, and I truly believe that. I watched The Making of Trump, which I think everybody should watch, because he is a very brilliant man. He sounds brilliant, but he's not polished.
Okay, we need to hold you there, Heather. We're almost out of time.
Mm-hmm. This, as I said before, across the ideological spectrum, Americans are deeply frustrated and disgusted with the political and economic status quo. Mm-hmm. And what's unfortunate is that, you know, Donald Trump, who does not have a plan other than, you know, Donald Trumpism, to get big money out of politics, to reform the system. He has not endorsed some of the really important campaign finance reforms that are could easily be done if there were leadership focused on them. He's basically saying the solution to the system is me, and that's just not enough. One person is not enough.
Heather, thank you so much for being with us. It's a really sad day, isn't it?
Just, it is.
Ugh, I just feel crummy today. Thank you. I hope you'll join us again. Thanks.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Heather McGee, president of DEMOS. It's a public policy organization. In 2009, she co-chaired a task force that helped shape key provisions of the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act. Thanks very much to Scotty Myers and KP Whaley and Carrie Salinas for producing and doing on-air production of this show. Tomorrow, the first ever United States of Women Summit at the White House. We will talk about that during this particular hour tomorrow. And next hour, we continue focus on the horrendous Orlando shootings.